Welcome to Movies on the Brain Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chad Metz, and today next to me is...
Your other co-host, Brian C. Wood.
And if you've listened to this before, you know this is a new thing because I'm opening the show instead of Brian here. And there is a reason for that, and I'm going to... There was a little movie that came out, a sequel, 20 years in the making, that I didn't get to see, but...
I invited you. Unfortunately, you passed out.
I was passed out, and apparently that was the right move to make. So, without further ado, we're going to now hear about this movie that maybe shouldn't have been, Independence Day Resurgence, or whatever the hell it's called.
Okay, so, this guy, Roland Emmerich, he made a Godzilla movie, right?
That's right, he did make that.
That is so beloved, right?
If by love you mean like a piece of trash that needs to be flushed down the toilet several times.
Hey, it gave us a good P. Diddy song.
Did it? I don't even remember.
Come with me.
I have issues with P. Diddy or Sean Combs. I refuse to call him P. Diddy.
So, this was not as bad as Godzilla. But this was something different. Independence Day Resurgence commits the cardinal sin of being a movie... sequel to one of the a really fun movie that has no fun in it. I was amazed at a couple of different things here. One, the fact that Emmerich had talked for 20 years. The first time I remember hearing him talk about an Independence Day sequel was on the press tour for The Day After Tomorrow. So he's been talking. You know, he talked about it on when he was doing Stonewall, when he was doing all the major movies, 2012, all the different ones that he's done. Every press tour, he would get asked about an Independence Day sequel, and he'd say the same thing. We're going to do a sequel. It's going to involve, what if the aliens sent out a distress call, and what if that distress call got heard, and then what would take, you know, what has been 20 years to us would only be like 5 minutes to them with their intergalactic travel, and they'd come back, and how would we fight back? So, he talked about it for 20 years. And when they finally dated these movies a while back, when Fox, 20th Century Fox finally committed to doing the movies, they realized his Emmerich's original plan of calling them ID Forever, Parts 1 and 2. A lot of the people going to see this movie don't know that history, that in the development stages of the movie it was called Independence Day Forever, Parts 1 and 2. That's very clear in this movie. Like, this movie has that feeling of a Part 1. And the ending just reeks of, tune in next week! Look, there are a lot of issues that I have with this movie. The first being that for the first 30 minutes to 45 minutes of the movie, it feels like there's a lot of information that's supposed to be inferred. Like there's some kind of prequel novel or prequel comic that I missed that I was supposed to have read to have prepared me to enter this world. A good example of that, I'll give a good example of that, is the storyline that centers between Whitmore's daughter, Liam Hemsworth character, and the guy who plays Will Smith's son, the kid, Heller. There's a whole backstory there that's hinted at in a scene in the White House about try not to hit him when you see him, and they very much imply that Heller and Whitmore's kids, who were in that bunker together, who would have known each other from that time on, that there is a past relationship there, a past friendship there that's kind of implied. She's now working for the president as a chief of staff or an advisor or a speechwriter of some kind, and she has a relationship with the president, the current president, that is... again, hinted at, but not really explained as to, like, who she is or what, if they have some kind of relationship or kinship or connection or whatever. You know, there's just moments like that where Goldblum said that the only member of the original cast that isn't back besides Will Smith is the woman who played Connie, who was Goldblum's ex-wife in the mm-hmm. in the original movie. Goldblum said they would address why she was gone. They don't address why she's gone, and they give him a new love interest. And those two have a history that is, again, implied and feels like something that I should already know. And so it's just kind of weird. It's like he just dropped me back into this universe 20 years later, and, like, I've been here the whole time. I just was supposed to know all this stuff. So that was really off-putting. The action set pieces are cool. They're not mind-blowing. They don't advance special effects technology in any kind of way. He doesn't do as good of a job of relaying scale as he did the first time. This parts of this movie, to me, feel like the George Lucas, Terry Gilliam problem of, here is a filmmaker who's better off when he has limited number of tools and not every tool known to mankind. The set pieces are nice, they're functional, they serve the story well. The alien designs are really cool, especially the queen alien that they figured out. That was done really well. Goldblum is back in his full Goldbloominess. Judd Hirsch does an amazing job again in his small, limited role that he has. It feels like there's an entire subplot there that was cut, which the movie's only 2 hours, so...
It's not longer than that?
No, it's a two-hour runtime. The original was 2 hours and 35 minutes. And you feel that in places, where it feels like it's rushing to get to its conclusion. The cameos, or extended cameos of all the past people, are fun. They got the general guy from the first one to do a cameo before he died, which I thought was really nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, it very much is a torch-passing movie in the sense that they're trying to focus on Hemsworth, Whitmore, and Heller's kid, and that's going to be the new triumphant going forward. Dr. Oaken, who is Oakenshield or whatever his name was, who turns out was, because again, if you own the DVD and you watch the deleted scenes, you know that he didn't die. He was just unconscious and in a coma. And he's been in a coma for 20 years since the events of the first movie. And he wakes up. They do a really cool thing with, contact, disease. Which is when you make contact with one of the aliens, when they grab their tentacles around your throat, that you become symbiotically attuned to them, that you kind of have a part of them inside of you that can communicate and can hear. The best way I can relate it is the way that Harry and Voldemort are connected through the star, same type deal. But there's no fun in it. There's humor. There are classic 90s type cheesy lines, but there's no fun there. And it really doesn't know. It seems to me to be a movie that really doesn't know what it wants to be tone wise, because the first hour is really dimly lit, Zack Snyder like, intense, like, imminency, and then we move from that to the action sequences, which are all 90s upbeat, fun, ha-ha moments. And so it really, I looked up on the IMDb, and it's the first credit that comes up on the screen. Five writers. Five screenplay by credits and two story by credits. So this kind of feels to me like Dean and Emmerich did their thing, had their story, got their screenplay, and then got help. And I think that where that help comes in kind of muddles things. But again, make no mistake, there is, if this one does enough, there will be another one coming. There were only 100 people in my screening. The IMAX, it was in the IMAX theater, there were only 100 people in my screening. So I don't know what it's going to end up doing over the weekend. But it's just a movie that doesn't have fun with itself. It's a movie that, for at least the first hour, takes itself way too seriously. And it's a movie that does not trade enough on nostalgia, if that's, you know, possible.
Really? I thought this one would have, like, that would have been a whole shtick with
Okay, like, you know the big thing from Independence Day that everybody remembers, besides the shot of blowing up the White House, is Whitmore's speech. Mm. Problem here is not just one person gets a speech. Everybody gets a speech, including Whitmore, who's got the best speech. Of course. But it's given to, like, 15 people standing around in the hangar who just realize he's talking and turn around and look at him. Like, it's not... He has his big hero moment at the end, but it's... I don't know. It's just... It's like a guy developed this movie for 20 years knowing where he wanted to go and how he wanted to get there, and he didn't execute it well. And it just feels weird to me. It's a movie that is not fun and should be the height of fun.
So,
and by the way, I know you talked about the Memorial, the holiday weekend, and they're probably looking to double dip, and that's why they released it before the July 4th week. July 4th has absolutely nothing to do with this movie. It's referenced. It's independent. You've heard the line in the advertisements. It's 4th of July. Let's show them some fireworks. Mm-hmm. That's as much as the Independence Day weekend is mentioned or related to.
I still think they should have dropped it on that weekend, particularly since you said there were only 100 people in your screening. I've already heard reports that Dory's probably going to beat it this weekend, which...
Dory could possibly swim past Captain America Civil War for the number one movie of the summer.
There's not another kid's
movie for a while. There's... Secret Life of Pets, which is mid-July.
It'll stop then. But that's like the middle of July. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, Dory's going to run for a while. Just guess, how much do you think it'll make?
35? Whew! It's... Like I said, the marketing has been heavy. They've done a really heavy marketing campaign for it. It's just... I remember watching those first trailers that they dropped and being like, this is a really weird tone for what this movie should be. And, like, the first hour is that tone. And it's a movie that takes itself very seriously for that period of time. And it just doesn't... I just can't imagine or understand what happened to take this for 20 years and not have this actually work out well. And sitting at 41% on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way.
I think I saw it was at 43. So, so word of mouth's not going to be great. It's already, and it's facing Dory, and it's going to lose to Dory. I would hazard to guess this is probably the last one we're going to see.
Depends on how it does internationally.
Then international does.
Because at the end of the movie, spoilers, because I've been trying to stay away from spoilers, but at the end of the movie, the whole setup for the next movie, the part two of Independence Day Forever, part one and two, is a Independence Day movie not set on Earth.
That's what I figured.
A Independence Day movie set in space with... one last battle with the galaxy versus the aliens, essentially. And with new technology. More advanced technology. So, it's a more expensive movie, I would assume. And doesn't take place a whole lot on Earth, from what I would assume.
That's...
Because they gave him the green light initially to do both. And they were talking at one point about filming both together. And then Fox... And then Fox hit the brakes and said, let's see how the first one does. And I'm sure that they gave Emmerich a number it has to hit to make a sequel viable.
I really wonder what that number is. And this is Fox, so...
But I mean, they're looking to be Jurassic World is what they were looking to be.
No, They're not going
to touch it. No, I mean, I'm not talking about box office, but that's what they were trying to be. A 90s movie, a sequel 20-something years later, hitting on all the nostalgia beats.
But Jurassic World is... I still don't understand why it did so much.
Nope. All
right. So, I don't understand how... I still can't wrap my mind around Jurassic World, but Jurassic World did have it had Chris Pratt, and he was coming off Guardians, and everybody liked that, and they were able to capture the nostalgia of Jurassic World, and it sounds more like they got it more right than this. This movie, I mean, what's the biggest thing they got going for it, actor-wise? But Goldblum, and then Goldblum and Hemsworth, and not even the good Hemsworth.
Well, I mean, look, the problem to me, there are a lot of problems for me with this movie, but like one of the big ones is that it doesn't trade on the nostalgia in the right ways. All of the plot of the movie is, again, if you go back and you find an old interview from Emmerich from 2002, the plot's all there. You know, you remember when Whitmore is grabbed by the alien in Area 51,
uh-huh.
And he says, you know, I've seen what they do. They're like locusts. They move from planet to planet, using up the resources and then moving on. And they're here to extinguish us, nuke them. Essentially, what we didn't know then, or what wasn't shown because probably they couldn't show it visually with the technology we had at the time, was that there was an alien ship that landed in Africa that was drilling with a plasma drill, drilling toward the metallic core of the Earth, and that's what they need to refuel and then move on. So when they destroyed the mothership, that drill stopped. And essentially what happened was they sent out a distress call. The queen got that call, and she brought her in her enormous drill, which is 25 times the size of the small drill that was in Africa, and she basically sets up shop and decides to start drilling to the Earth's core and trying to take that core. And so that's the whole point, is they reiterate again that they're trying to take our resources and make us extinct and move on. The shots of the cities, like, it's not so much that they're blowing cities up, it's that cities are getting destroyed when it's moving into the Earth's atmosphere because it's so big and it has its own gravity.
Oh.
And so essentially what happens is it sucks up all kinds of landmarks and cars and trees and things. And then when it lands and it plants its legs and starts its drilling, that gravity is turned back off, and so what goes up must come down. And so all the things that it sucked up fall down to what is remaining and just finish the complete destruction. There's only one shot where he really conveys the size really well, and that's the size. That's when you pull out and you see how much of the Earth this thing conveys. But that's the whole deal. The whole plot is essentially we've got to find a way to kill the queen before this drill hits the Earth's core and, you know, takes our core away, you know?
I mean, the description of the ship and how that works, that is actually, that sounds cool.
Well, it is, and it's visually cool, but it's different from 35 different ships hovering around 35 different landmarks around the world, all blowing up at the same time.
Yeah.
So, like, they have that. And then the bigger set piece, or the set piece I had more fun with, actually, was the set piece where the base where the president is taken to, and the Joint Chiefs and all of the line of succession, the queen goes there.
Oh.
And the queen actually, like, it's an alien's or alien type situation where you're in this building, the lights are off, the fog's going, and you know she's somewhere, you just don't know where. And she comes out from behind, and it's a really cool set piece. And the stuff at Area 51, the final battle, is pretty cool, but there's nothing to the level of what, set piece wise, of what they did back in 96.
Alright, well, unfortunately, I'm probably still going to have to see this movie, so thanks for warning me that it's terrible. And now we just have to wait and see what the box office looks like. And
again, I want to know what that number is. Because, like, the thing about Jurassic World was Jurassic World is a direct sequel to Jurassic Park. They act like the events of San Diego didn't happen. Yeah. So it's basically, hey, we are going to build... What would happen... Spielberg's whole premise was, what would happen if there was a fully functional park today? And what would happen if... So when you have a fully functional, realized version of John Hammond's dream, that's automatically going to call people back to the Doors in the park and their first shocked looks of awe when they saw the dinosaurs for the first time and the music cues from John Williams' score and all of that. So, like, I'm not a huge fan of Jurassic World.
Me neither.
It is not a good movie on any base level, and it's not a movie that can hold a candle to what the original Jurassic Park did. But it made a lot of money, and we're going to get more sequels.
Mm-hmm.
But they at least had fun. Like, they have a freaking guy working in the control room with an original Jurassic Park shirt on.
Yeah.
And they actually call him out on the fact that, you know, that was a national tragedy that these people died and one guy got eaten when he was on the toilet. Like, how can you wear that t-shirt? Like, they are very self-referential about the whole deal. And they don't take themselves... They go to the freaking old visitor's center.
Yeah.
They use the old Jeeps. Like, Chris Pratt watches a dinosaur die. Like, they hit all of the beats. They reference everything, and they have fun with it. It's not a wink-wink, nudge-nudge thing. It's a, you know, we're going to have fun with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Independence Day does not have fun with itself at all.
Well.
And again, one of my big issues is it feels like I've been dropped back into a world where I'm supposed to know a lot more than I already do.
So, if you're, since you referenced the number, I wonder how, so far, what is this, the third movie Fox had come out this year?
Well, Deadpool, X-Men Apocalypse, and this. And I actually think, depending on how well their opening weekend goes, X-Men Apocalypse could make more than Independence Day Resurgence.
And that is terrible, because,
They hadn't even cracked $200 million domestic yet last time I looked.
Let's see, I have it right here. They are not that far up. They are at 146 domestic.
Right.
As of last weekend.
That's 3 weeks in release.
That is absolutely terrible. And if this makes less than that, that is just insane. So with the fact that it looks like X-Men is taking a little bit of a bath, even if... I don't know what number they could give him for this, considering.
The budget, he has to hit $250 million domestic to justify a sequel.
Oh, that's out the window. It's right. Gone. It's done. If it can't be Dory, which Dory made 135 opening weekend, so if it drops 60%, you're looking at like still 60 million. If it's not going to beat, if it's not hitting 70, it's done. For the week. I mean, it's done for...
Well, I mean... I'd almost have rather them greenlight him both. Because it's gonna feel really weird.
Not having that's the obvious second part?
Not just the obvious second part. The, like, we're gonna go kick some more alien ass. Like, that's literally the last line of the movie is, we're gonna go kick some more alien ass.
I figured that.
Like...
Who said it?
Oaken.
Oh. Oh. Okay.
Yeah, like, he has a major, like, he's all over this movie. He still hasn't been out of Area 51 in, you know, 30 years, but, you know.
That is so weird to me, because I always thought he died, and then to see that he's back.
Well, and apparently they, like, hint at a homosexual lover that he had, who also worked at Area 51, who's also back, and it's he has this death scene, and it's just really weird, and it's just, I mean, it just so much in that movie that just, it's like, it's gonna feel really, really weird. I don't know who made him change the title. I don't know if Fox made him change it to Resurgence, but, I mean, you know, Deathly Hallows did the part 1 and 2, New Moon did the 1 and 2, like, Justice League was gonna do the 1 and 2. So, I mean, like, there's precedent for it. So I don't know who made him change the title, but maybe they have made him change the title for this exact reason, so that if there isn't enough justification for a sequel,
they're off the hook.
Right.
Well, that... it's going to be interesting next week to see the box office for that. Okay, so enough about that set of aliens. We've already touched on the box office a little bit, so... the thing that dominated the news this week was all of this Justice League talk.
Which I got to talk to Jim Vegeta over the week, congratulating him on his quality work, along with all the other various and sundry reporters who went and did the set visit.
He was part of it?
He was part of it.
Okay.
He was part of it. Frosty was part of it. Devin was part of it. I think even Drew from Hit Facts went.
I don't know. I didn't check Hit Facts.
So, I mean, it's... You know, they... This was, to me, a PR... you know how the one thing we were... begging Joe Leavitt to do during the whole Les Miles deal was just talk.
Yeah.
Just say something, like, come out with a statement and, like, support, or just, you know, give give the boilerplate stuff, and instead he just stayed completely quiet the entire time while we know his emails and have seen the emails and such, and we know he wasn't being quiet.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I feel here. Like, this is just them coming out and doing damage control.
That's exactly,
like,
what it is, yeah.
This is like, and Devin put this perfectly in his piece. This is, it's like, we're going to take the unbeliever, we're going to take you, the skeptic, who doesn't believe that we're doing this right and that we screwed this up royally, and we're going to show you all of these things we're doing to kind of move in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try and convince you that the next thing's going to be different. And... from Deborah Snyder's comments to the scene with Flash that they saw filmed to Affleck's comments, it was all Zack Snyder's comments about being taken aback and about changing and all of that. It just seemed to me like they were, okay, look, we've been filming for a month, we've got all this negative publicity around us, let's at least... invite everybody over, we'll show them the things that we need to show them to hopefully get enough goodwill built up to get some positive pieces put out there so that we can get some goodwill built up.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And there are a couple of things that I want to touch on in that. But the fact that when I found out they were doing the set visit and I found out that Devin was going, First, to lay it out for everybody, normally on big movies, they'll have set visits. Like Civil War had one, Avengers had one. They'll bring all the reporters out. They'll show them all this stuff.
They'll embargo them for a year.
That's exactly it. This, they embargo them for, 3 days? And that is what makes this so unprecedented, is that...
And Devin had stipulations for going. Like, he was like, I'm not going to go if this is, like, some year-long embargo where I can't talk about what I saw. I'm not going to go if this is just them trying to, you know, put on a PR show.
And him specifically, that they invited him, everybody, there were a whole bunch of people that went, and everybody had all this news coming out. But his was the one I looked for first because, and he said it in his piece that I'm the guy that said I hated this, and they saw that I hated this, and they're like,
knew that I hated this, and specifically cited that and why they wanted to get me over here.
Exactly. So his opinion was the one I valued the most because he's coming from that viewpoint. And he came away, actually, like he said, it could still turn out bad.
Cautiously optimistic was the word that he used.
Yeah, and from where he started, where the piece he wrote about Zack Snyder was, he was completely wrong for this, he was ruining it, they need to move him off of this, like, yesterday. To come from that position to still seeing Zack, hearing Zack talk, and come back and say he's cautiously optimistic, I think that's probably the best endorsement you can get, which is...
At the same time, as Jim Vega pointed out, the Green Lantern movie had a really cool set visit, too, with Geoff Johns leading that tour.
And every last one of them, Devin and Frosty, they all said they were on Green Lantern, and they saw all this stuff, and they're like, this is going to be the best thing ever. And then they walked out, and they're like, this is not what I saw. What is this? So there, it could still turn out terrible, but...
That's the concern I have, is that this was a show. Like, okay, what's our big criticism? Our big criticism is that our tone is too dark. So let's cherry pick which scene we want them to watch film. Oh, we have this nice little witty scene with Flash and Bruce, where he's going to get recruited to join Justice League. And we have this witty banner in this particular set of the part of the movie. Let's let them see that get filmed so that they can... see that we're at least going to have some humor in it. Maybe we're not going to change our entire tone, but we are at least going to have some slight humor in it. And so I kind of feel like there's this great old De Niro movie called Wag the Dog, which is all about how this fake president wants to put on this fake war on television so that he can make money. Like, it just kind of... There is a part of me that wonders if this isn't just all, like, one big, well, we know what you want to see, so here's what you want to see.
I mean, that can always be in your mind, because we know that they know what people don't like about it. And it is easy for us to show, oh, we're going to shoot this scene now. We have this scene for you to see. Every one of them acknowledged that, on a movie this big, previews and all that stuff is already going on. So the big set pieces are pretty much like they are from before Batman vs. Superman came out. But they can play with what connects it. And that's what this was. The two scenes they talked about was the scene they saw shot was Commissioner Gordon. I'm forgetting his real name.
Yeah. J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. They saw his first day on set, and it was seen between him as Commissioner Gordon, who they all, to a man, said he looks like Batman animated series cosplay Commissioner Gordon, so he looks good. On the rooftop next to the bat signal, talking to Batman, Wonder Woman, and the Flash. And in the course of the conversation, Cyborg shows up. And at that point, they all highlighted this point. When Cyborg walks up to them, Wonder Woman stops. Well, she turns and looks at him, and she smiles. And every one of them says this scene could not have been in Batman vs. Superman or Man of Steel because nobody smiled in any of those movies. So there's that scene, and then there's the scene with Batman recruiting the Flash. I guess I should have said spoilers before talking about these scenes, but they showed it to them, so I don't think they consider it spoilers, so it's kind of safe. Basically, the scene set up...
I mean, that's all scenes that have to... perfunctory scenes that have to happen. You have to bring the Justice League together, you know, and those two scenes, to me, indicated, you know, when Cyborg decides to join up...
Exactly.
And when Flash decides to join up.
Exactly.
So.
But, you know, some people, like, they don't want to know anything, so... Spoilers.
It's been
sorry.
A bad week if that's the case for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well,
with some movies.
But I will talk about some reactions I've seen about this at the end. But Bruce is sitting in Barry's apartment, and Barry shows up, and they have this banter back and forth where Bruce is asking him, you know, he takes the picture from the video we see in Batman vs Superman and says, "This is you," and Barry's like, "No, because I don't drink milk," and, "Well, what about this?" And his flash suit is sitting in the middle of the room. He's like, "I like to figure skate," or something stupid like that. At which point, Bruce is like, "Forget this." He tosses a batarang at him. Barry uses his powers. He slows stuff down. The slow-mo shot, he looks at the batarang. He plucks it out the air. And then you see him figure it out. And he stops and he looks at Bruce. And Bruce is like, "You're fast." And he's like, "You're Batman." And it's like, "Can I keep this?" Referencing the batarang. And everybody really loved that scene. So those two scenes really highlight what the other two movies missed. So it's, while on the one hand it's like, okay, they get what we want to see, on the other hand on that is that this could be it. That could be the only two scenes like that in the movie. And then we're stuck with those two scenes surrounded by the stuff we've gotten before.
What do you make about the refrain that came from Snyder and Snyder's camp, which was essentially, this was our plan all along, that we were going to deconstruct our heroes, and then we were going to bring them low, and then we were going to raise them back up?
I think that only works in the instance of Superman in this, only because they literally killed him in the last movie.
But do you think this was the plan all along, to do two dark movies and then do a sort of okay to, you know, light comedy?
No. I do think Justice League was going to be lighter than Batman vs. Superman, because before that came out, they were like, Justice League naturally is lighter because we have characters like The Flash. But the way that it looks like they're trying to steer it, no, I don't think that was the case. It's clear that, and Snyder even said he was taken aback by the reaction of Batman vs. Superman, and it's clear that this is a course correction. So, yeah, they're going to say all that stuff. They can't just say, no, they caught us with our pants down, we got this dark movie, and nobody liked it. So now we got to change all that stuff. They can't say that, but that's what it is.
I mean, it works better the way that Marvel did it, where you build all your heroes up, you showcase all their powers, you raise them up to a good place, and then challenge them with a foe of substantial size for a team-up movie. And once, after you get through that first team-up movie, then you can spend the next however many movies deconstructing everybody and bringing everybody low. I don't think that, like, having not seen the Wonder Woman movie, or Suicide Squad, which is now in the can and on its way to the print. It doesn't work well for... I don't understand why, when the term hero is used, you want to deconstruct and bring them low, only to raise them up and bring them back up to where they should be.
So I don't think that they had to go the Marvel way to build everything up. I think they could have gone
with... No, but I'm not saying build them up. I'm saying do Superman and Batman movies where they are the way we typically interpret them. Not Superman and Batman movies where they're dark and brooding and being made to go low. Like, you know, freaking Superman has to deal with the fact that not only did his father die, but his mother gets kidnapped by Lex Luthor and held at blowtorch point. Lois is almost killed on an hourly basis.
Well, that's kind of normal.
Right. You know, he's told from a very young age he might have to let a school bus full of children die. He spends an entire movie being ridiculed for the destruction of Metropolis, which was totally unintentional. And oh, by the way, he did save the world by stopping Zod. And Batman is just dark, brooding, angry, and, like, vengeful and killing people. So, like, you don't need to bring them that morally and psychologically low, only to raise them up to where they normally are for a Justice League movie.
I agree with that. When Batman vs. Superman was announced, in my mind, because we know both of these characters so well, you can do this movie because you can present them, even though this is a new Batman, and this Superman's only had one movie, if you present them as everybody knows them, because everybody knows them, they've been around for 75 years, at that one spot, you can do the movie and pull it off and not have to build from all these other movies. But yeah, they went the deconstruction route because, mostly because Snyder is a fan of that. That's the stuff he got into.
That's the Watchmen style. Watchmen is a deconstruction of the superhero dynamic.
Yeah, and the book they lean heavily on is Dark Knight Returns. Same thing.
There is nothing heroic about Watchmen or Watchmen's material.
Yes. And that is, at his core, I think that's what got Snyder into comics. That's what he cites the most. And that's what they went with. Now, why didn't people over him be like, whoa, pump the brakes. That's not what we need to do. That they just let him run with that. That's a question for WB. This Zack Snyder made the movie he wanted to make. Well,
are you going to see the 3-hour cut in theaters?
There's not one close to here.
Not even here in?
No. I've checked the last 2 days. If there was one in Baton Rouge, yes, I would go see it. Because I'm going to buy this movie because I'm a glutton for punishment. That's just what's going
to
happen.
Well, I'm intrigued to see if it helps the movie.
I think it's going to help the storytelling. And I think that is the movie Zack Snyder wants to tell. And I think when we watch that cut, it'll be like, okay, this is more cohesive. But it's still not the story that should have been told. I don't fault Snyder. This is like, the 3-hour cut comes out. This is the movie he wanted to make. And it's more cohesive. Like, okay, this is a Zack Snyder movie. This is what he wants to make. I can forgive him for the thing that came out because they hacked it up. But I can't forgive them for choosing to go this direction when they didn't have to.
Right. I mean, like I said, I would much rather you have your characters relatable and to the point where I actually can recognize them and then do the team-up movie and not deconstruct them and bring them low only to bring them back up to where they normally are.
No, you shouldn't do that. Like, the way I've always seen it play out, particularly with Superman, is that, you know, he's introduced, and then he has, like, a big challenge, and then in almost every incarnation of Superman, there's a story where it feels like something happens and Earth feels like we can't trust him, and then it's up to him to bring it back. That's normally where it ends, and it's kind of weird, but they kind of went straight to the Earth doesn't trust him, and let's see what happens from there. Even though they made it weird because Earth trusted him, but he was clearly at a point where Earth shouldn't trust him. But, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just interested to see, because the story really for Justice League really doesn't appeal to me. Like, like, we're going to go run around chasing mother boxes, and we're going to chase Steppenwolf, get a hold of them before Steppenwolf does.
That story is,
I mean, it's a better story than Zombie Superman rising from the dead to become a villain for the Justice League to have to take down.
Yeah, which is what I really think that was going to happen. So, I kind of intrigued how that works, because the previz is already going on. How that works, because if they even thought about doing that for a second in this one, they can't do it now. If they do it now, it's done. Everything is smoldering in Justice League the minute that happens. So,
you've got to raise him up from that casket.
He has to come out, and it's going to, is the one thing nobody on the set visit knew anything about, because nobody was talking about with Superman. There's a whole lot of interesting things with him. He's got to come back from the dead. When he comes back from the dead, how does he come back from the dead?
Mother Box.
To see, you can do Mother Box. We already saw at the end of the movie the dirt started to come up, so it kind of implies that he's not quite dead. There's still the ship in that pile mall of dirty dishwater stuff that Lex is playing in, but that makes things into Doomsday, so there's a whole bunch of different ways they can go, but he has to come back. I gotta hope they don't put him in a stupid mullet from the 90s when he returned, and that black suit, I would be inclined to be pissed off. I would hold back because I know that it's like technically canon because that's what happened, but the mullet was stupid. I don't want to see black suit. I want to see Superman in all his glory because I have... I saw some of it in Man of Steel because I don't hate that like everybody else does. I saw none of it in Batman vs. Superman. And since that's the last one I saw, I want to see Superman in all his glory. So they can't mess that up. But yeah, all the mystery surrounding Superman, nobody really knows anything except that he's probably not coming in until like the
third act.
Yeah.
Where we can expect to see Dr. Manhattan, right?
No. No. I like that movie. But no. Let's leave it there.
Let's leave it there.
What else about the... Because there's a whole bunch of stuff about Justice League.
Well, I mean, it's... Affleck said they're still working on the script for the Batman. He said that his Batman won't murder from now on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... There are pieces and parts here. I mean, it just the whole thing felt like a end of the season, like, let me try and steer all the bad publicity I've been getting and turn it around. Now, the thing is, I think that they've done it with a substantial part of the fan base and with a substantial part of the new movie genre nerd community. The thing about it is it's about momentum. So you had this really good press set visit tour, which has gotten you some goodwill and good faith back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to take that and you have to build on it at Comic-Con with Affleck and whoever else you bring, with all the Suicide Squad stuff that you're doing. You have to build on it there. And then, you know, Suicide Squad needs to be a positive for you. And then you need to take that and build that onto that with a solid EW cover spread for
Wonder Woman.
For your Wonder Woman or Justice League.
And Wonder Woman comes first, they have to do that.
Right. And then you build on it with a good Wonder Woman movie. It's you can't just take this small bit of positive that you got from the set visit and then undo it all at Comic-Con. You need to build, securing victory. You need to keep securing victory. You know, one win at a time, one big rollout at a time. And if you keep winning each news cycle, you put yourself in a good position for next November.
Okay. And now that makes me go to the people that I know that don't like this. It hasn't been that many, but the people that I've heard that don't like this, they're all like, they really think the whole thing was stupid, mostly because they have Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman coming.
You think that they staged it to... these people think that they staged it specifically to get positive press? Because, look. Wonder Woman is still a year out. Mm-hmm. It's a year from now. Literally, a year from right now.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad's going to have a huge rollout at Comic-Con. Like, they are pouring, I don't know how many millions into the marketing already, and then into Comic-Con itself. So that Comic-Con is the official rollout for Suicide Squad, and that's 2 weeks before the movie comes out.
Yeah.
So you don't really... You didn't need to do a set visit for that movie, and they're about to start press junket interviews. So it's not like you needed to do anything for Suicide Squad.
Their point is more along the lines that you have these two movies, and like if they suck... It doesn't matter what the press visit is, because the next thing people remember is Suicide Squad sucked. And we all agree that Suicide Squad kind of needs to at least be moderately good.
Because the two things that you're going to have to pull out of that are Harley Quinn and Joker. So at least those two elements have to work.
For that, but more than that is the word of mouth, the perception of DC as a film brand. That if they can't get Suicide Squad off the mat, then why are we supposed to continue with the rest of this stuff? So they're like, well, why you do this, and you have these two movies coming? This overshadows them right now. You and I agree that Suicide Squad is going to get its build-up as it should, like, within the next month. But if either one of those don't hit, particularly if Suicide Squad doesn't hit, you're kind of dead in the water as it is. So they feel like it's stupid to do this, to garner all this attention for Justice League. That's 17 months away when you have these two movies. That if you focus on these two movies and make them good, then it rolls into Justice League.
The problem is we just got finished saying Suicide Squad is on its way to the print. Like, Air is, and by the way, I can't wait for that press to, that press junket, because Air is going to be off his rocker, man.
He did something on Twitter today. I don't know what it was.
He just announced that he just announced that the film was on its way to the, to print. Like, it is done, and it is the bomb. It is the it is the insert your obscenity here. Like, is. Like, it's going to blow the world away, was his quote, I think.
It sounds like I need to follow him, because he's got some... I should have followed him at the Comic-Con when he came on the stage and, like, we got the villains, bump what they got. I guess I should have followed him then, but...
yeah. When, like, in the Marvel-DC rivalry, yeah, it's like, East Coast, West Coast hip-hop.
Exactly, but at that... And it was good at the time, but...
He, yeah.
But, I mean, when it comes to, like, the stuff going on... It's not really a rivalry, so he's kind of like, you know, barking up. He's the little dog barking at the big dog. So, yeah, his movie, for him, his movie really needs to hit, because he's been talking a lot, and it ain't going to stop. Yeah, the press tour is going to be not even that. When he steps on the stage at Comic-Con, if they are stupid enough to give him a mic, which they're going to do, I don't know what he's going to say, but my God, I hope it's streaming somewhere, because I need to see it. I don't know what he's going to say, but this is going to be fun. So if his enthusiasm keeps through, hopefully the movie actually is what he says it is. And most of this is put to bed. Because if Suicide Squad is as good, half as good as his enthusiasm for the movie is, it's going to be fine. So it'll just be up to Wonder Woman not to crap the bed. And that's kind of the one, that's the one I'm more worried about.
Hey, we've talked about it many times in this podcast. That cast is designed and set up to carry Gal Gadot wherever she needs to go.
Yeah, is she actually careable, or is she like...
Well, I saw one of the trailers that was played before Independence Day, because the trailer that should not be named did not play in front of it, thank God. It's a new movie she's doing with Jon Hamm. It's a comedy with Zach Galifianakis called Keeping Up with the Joneses. And she generally has some funny lines, and she has some good action set pieces, and it really looks like her and Jon Hamm have good chemistry and good repartee, and she has a scene where she just literally is standing in a bra and panties, and she can definitely pull that kind of stuff off. So, I like the fact that she can portray both the sexiness and the toughness of Wonder Woman. I do think she can embody that very well. I think she's going to do fine. She did fine in her limited role in the Fast and the Furious movies. She was a positive in Dawn of Justice, where there weren't a lot of positives. And I think that if you expand her out, you should be able to get, you know, something pretty decent.
It's just that those first two roles, she's in Dawn of Justice for about...
16 lines.
Yeah. And this, she has to carry this... Well, she has to be serviceable enough for everybody else to carry the movie for her. The thing is, I know between Batman vs. Superman and her filming Wonder Woman, she did movies like this movie with Jon Hamm and a couple of other ones. And the more she does, the better she'll get just naturally. So hopefully that has helped her into this. But if these two movies work, along with this set visit, Justice League will be in good shape. I don't know... I hope Warner's tempers their box office expectations for Justice League, because it's like 2 weeks after Thor, Ragnarok.
And like 4 weeks before Episode 8.
Yeah, so it can make money, but we've seen this year with the closeness of the movies.
Well, I mean, remember, we were reading articles on Forbes about, of course it's going to make $1 billion, because it's a Batman who makes this much per movie, and Superman who makes this much per movie, plus the debut of Wonder Woman on screen. There's no way this movie's not going to make $1 billion.
And that would be true if the movie was actually, like, good.
And so we got what we got, and we got the box office to show for it.
The fact that the movie made that much money is a testament to the three things you just said. Because if it was any other movie, like if it were X-Men per se, It would have still made more money than this X-Men is making, but it would have been in that boat. So, there's a whole lot for Justice League. So, I say pick your favorite news site and go, because you'll be there for like an hour. But that's kind of where we're at with it for right now. The other big thing that just came out of like yesterday was the Rogue One stuff with EW and the various things that came out with it. Namely, we got confirmation that Darth Vader's in the movie. And James Earl Jones, James Earl Jones is going to do the voice.
Shock!
I read the headline for that and I'm like, yeah. Okay. Can you give me something else? But honestly, I didn't read all of the Rogue One stuff just because there was a lot. But there were some interesting things like Forrest Whitaker's character. Because we're finally getting something where a character from one of the other realms of Star Wars is making his way into a movie. I have no idea who this character is because he came from the Clone Wars that I didn't watch.
Not only did he come from the Clone Wars, he came from 5 episodes of the Clone Wars.
Have you watched the Clone Wars?
I have watched some of it. I am not as well versed as I should be, but he's a character who was only in 5 episodes. He had one storyline arc, and it was basically like the idea is that this guy is a fringe guy. This is a guy who takes tactics that are a little bit more risque than what the rebellion is would not necessarily approve of. So, he's got one storyline, 1 5 episode arc. He didn't have as big of a cult following as some of the other characters, namely the woman.
The one knows what Anakin.
Yeah.
I forget. Ahsoka.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't have that kind. He doesn't have that kind of a following. But it's a thing. Mm-hmm. It's a thing where I think Kathleen Kennedy and the story group wanted to throw a bone to the fans, and this was a way to throw something out there that the general audience wouldn't have any idea who in the hell this guy was, but diehard Star Wars nerds would, and so it brings him full-fledged. That, you know, the Vader thing, look, I don't expect Vader to show up to the last third act of the movie, and again, like I've said on this podcast, I fully expect him to be in full Vader mode, like mowing people down, trying to get to Jane Erso before she hits the send button.
Please, please, because that's the Vader I always want to see. If you've watched Rebels, I've only watched like 3 episodes, and one of them was the one where Vader shows up for the first time. And the Vader that shows up in that episode is the Vader I've always wanted to see, because he just was like, there was no one was a match for him, and he was ruthless. And as much what you think of Darth Vader, that's what he was. From the what I do know about what they said Vader was going to be doing in this movie, he's like, I think it's Ben Mendelsohn's character. Mm-hmm. He's basically supervising him.
Well, the problem that you have here is that what they're saying, which is that, A, the movie takes place 35 years before Force Awakens. They're saying that Vader is kind of a myth. Like, apparently they know that if people in the Empire know that if you cross the Emperor, bad things can happen to you, and there's this rumor of this force that he can call upon if need be, but that he hasn't actually become he's more myth than legend than he is actual persona. So it seems to me this is going to be the first time Vader's actually stepping out as the Emperor's attacker.
Yeah, that's right, because at the end of episode 3, he kind of just...
Him and the CGI Tarkin are standing there with the Emperor watching the Death Star get constructed. Okay, and like you said, at the beginning of A New Hope, we get a hold to a Vader who's very angry and very ticked off, so we got to find out how he got there. So, you know, the plans are his responsibility because he's with Tarkin.
Yeah, and Tarkin's over Vader, but people don't know Vader's there. But this guy knows Vader's there, and Vader's like watching over his shoulder as he's trying to
climb the ladder and get.
Yeah, and
everybody wants to be at the right hand of the Emperor, and everybody's gonna backstab everybody to try and get there. You know, the usual good old Nazi political stuff.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to be trying to get there with Vader watching over my shoulder. Like, No, go. No, stop. Just, I don't want to die. Go away.
People die very regularly around Vader, especially when they screw up.
Yeah. What else did we get from Rogue One? We got the
photos, the Death Squad.
We have some character descriptions.
All of that stuff looks really cool and really fun. Those character descriptions have been out there forever. So, I mean, none of this was shocking material. The best part of this stuff was the reshoot confirmations where they tried to put the positive spin on that and be like, yo, folks, look, we planned on doing this beforehand. We didn't know what kind of a movie we had until we got into the edit room, and we always knew we were going to need more stuff. We just weren't going to know what stuff we needed until we got in the editing room. We got in the editing room. Now we know what we need to do, and so we're going to go get that stuff. And it's still going to be a war movie. It's still going to be the thing we promised you at Celebration a year ago. It's just we're going to need to do some additional pickups.
Yeah. And, I mean, they're going to be... It seems like the thing now is there are going to be rumors about what's wrong with the film when they have reshoots as it is. But for movies like this, this is just... This
is amazing to me because no one gives two flying figs when Marvel's down in Atlanta doing reshoots on Captain America Civil War in February.
No.
And I don't know if it's because they don't use the term reshoots, they use the term additional photography, if that helps some of the PR or what. But, like, no one ever cares when Marvel films go back in for reshoots. No,
but I've seen the same people that talk about reshoots for, like, Star Wars say reshoots for Marvel, but then they just don't bat an eye. But I think Marvel's just gotten to the point where they've conditioned people's like, we're going back for reshoots. Because I know Feige said, he said in interviews, we schedule in time to do reshoots, which is what everybody does. But they've said it so much that I guess it's just conditioned people to know, oh, they're going back to do reshoots. It's all fine. This is business as usual for Marvel. Whereas anybody else is like, reshoots is like the end of the world. We're burning this sucker down.
Especially with Star Wars fans here, as you said on this podcast before, have had bad things. And they don't handle it very well.
This is true. I thought that... Like, no.
That Band-Aid is over the scar, but the scar tissue hasn't formed yet to heal it.
I know we've only had one movie, but having that one movie and then seeing Disney's track record, particularly with Marvel these last few years, I thought it would have bought them a little bit more goodwill than this, than the words reshoots, and people like, it's burning down, it's going to be terrible, they're ruining everything again. But they do it across the street. Marvel literally does it across the street. And you're like, oh, they're picking daisies over there. It's fine. I know Star Wars fans. If this movie's good, I think you can put everything behind you and just sit back and enjoy stuff. Do a number.
What's your number?
For Rogue One? Man, this movie's...
What's your reasonable expectation? Because I don't think $1 billion is reasonable.
No, I don't think that's reasonable.
I think Dawn of Justice money's reasonable.
Yeah, I gave it...
$824 million worldwide. I think that's reasonable for a Star Wars movie that's not an episode.
I think it's reasonable, but if I were them, I'd be like, let's say $750 and get to that. I think they can do well over that, but I would just set the bar at $750.
I mean, we're going to get the next bit of news release at Celebration in July. And they'll do a panel, and they'll drop a trailer, and that'll have enough footage in it to appease people. Like you said, if there's like 5 seconds of Vader just mowing down people with his lightsaber, it'll be all anybody will talk about, and people will forget that, you know, we were concerned about them dropping AT-ATs, you know, into the sea and having them walk underwater.
I think this next trailer has to appease Star Wars fans and put their fears at ease, but it also has to educate the general population that...
This ain't episode 8.
Yeah. So, I know sticking Vader in there should be a clear red flag. Like, he died in episode 6, so if he's here, this could not happen. But I think you need to clearly spell out, this is the first Death Star. They're getting the plans for that. This is Darth Vader. You know where he came from.
Mon Mothra.
Yeah.
Who has an expanded role.
I don't even think the general population doesn't know who Mon Mothra is. They just know this is this white lady and this white thing, and she's got these green screens, and I don't know who the hell she is. I watched all these movies most times, and I didn't know her name for a long time. I just knew who she was. So stick to the basics. Death Star, first one, getting plans, Darth Vader, after plans. That's what you need to sell to the general audience. And then appease everybody else with the other stuff. But, I wouldn't even show Vader mowing anybody down. I would just see him, like, step out, hit a breath, ignite the lightsaber, cut the scene. Done. All right, so,
speaking of Marvel.
Yeah, so, Guardians of the Galaxy just wrapped. We got,
this was a really weird time for them to drop these.
The synopsis?
I would have waited till the panels.
I guess both, you could have.
Both are going to Comic-Con, and neither one of these synopses are going to, like, reveal the entire world to anybody.
Let's see. I had them. Let's see if I still have them saved. But, yeah, you're right, because I didn't realize they dropped them until I was doing this. I'm going down everything. I'm like, oh, they did drop these this week. I don't even remember.
Because the synopses are not earth-shattering. It's like the mysterious Doctor Strange, who is going to take a trip to see the Ancient One and learn the mystical ways.
Yeah,
and we're going to learn the true parentage of Star-Lord's father as we traverse the galaxy with the Guardians of the Galaxy, coming soon to a theater near you.
As I'm sitting here reading the synopsis, there were some of those same words in this, so kudos to you, sir.
Yeah, I remember, like, reading them. Like, I was like, why would you not wait till the panels to just drop these? Because there's no information in them. Like, literally no information of them. I don't even know why they qualified as news. Because the casting had already been announced, and, like, we already knew Star-Lord's father was going to be a huge part of Guardians. So it's not like you said, and Kurt Russell is playing J-Store. or J-Song, I should say.
Yeah. And I had it. I was looking at the dang synopsis and then the page.
Yeah, Collider's been having issues with the 404. But, I mean, it's... The two synopses are not anything earth-shattering or different or you know, groundbreaking. You know, it's... The more interesting news to me is how many people can fit into one Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go with what Brian said for the synopsis because it's pretty accurate and I can't pull it up right now. But yeah, the day Guardians wrapped, James Gunn put up a picture of him, Chris Pratt, and Tom Holland and basically said, tag, you're it. Spider-Man starting today as we wrap. And from that point on, like, we were getting casting news for Spider-Man for, like, a week and a half, and it hasn't stopped. It's like every day we get, like, somebody new. I'm like, good God, how many people are going to fit in here?
And not only that, we got Tom Rothman spelling out for us exactly how the Spider-Man deal works.
Which, again, we'd heard it from Kevin Feige, but that's one thing to hear from the Marvel side. To hear from Sony, like, we pretty much yielded all creative control to Marvel, and we're just sitting back here and collecting this paycheck. If you don't have any confidence in this deal before when Feige said it, you should have it now, because the Sony guy is like, yes, they're running it. We're right here. We're chilling. We're waiting to make the money. Which, I'm amazed that he said it, and I'm glad that he did, because now people can stop worrying about this and, like, this is...
I mean, this is the same guy who, like, told Bryan Singer he couldn't have flashy costumes in the first X-Men movie.
Well, clearly he's learned some stuff. It's like, I don't know what it... When people in tights come around, I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to let them do it and just give me the check at the end. Good deal, boss. We can work with that. But, yeah, this... So, again, since Collider's having problems, they've been... Just like today, they added somebody else. It was Garcia Buvo, who has been around, and I'm like, why is she in it? But there's her. They added the kid from Beasts of No Nations. Hannibal Buress is added to it. We talked about the guy from Freaks and Geeks last time.
Martin Starr.
I think they added a couple more kids and somebody else since then. And
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover and...
Michael Keaton.
Bokeem Woodham, I'm butchering his name, he got added yesterday. The thing about him is they're saying he might be a villain, which will make three. And for Spider-Man fans, when you say three, they're like, no, this did not work out good last time. Slow down. I don't know if we can handle this. But
if you're doing Vulture, the Tinkerer, and some other low-level guy...
Yeah, my hope is
you would have, because in this current incarnation, Vulture's technology is going to just be a variation on Falcon's suit. So you would need the Tinkerer to kind of work on that technology. Uh-huh. So that kind of fits. Those two being A and B kind of fit.
The third guy I would probably is probably going to be connected to the Tinker. I hope. I kind of hope they go the route the original Ultimate Spider-Man comics went. And, like, the story would open up, and Shocker's robbing a bank, and he's running out. And then Peter just webs him up, and he makes fun of him. And, like, hangs him by a lamppost with his pants pulled down, and people are laughing at him. And that's kind of, like, the running joke through that thing is, like, Shocker's just this joke. And maybe they do that with one of these guys. But it's for everybody else, like, the random people that are in
here. It all is high school set, so it makes sense that you would have young kids, and you'd have adults to be the teachers, and you truly get a John Hughes high school movie.
That, when they were saying the names, I'm like, that's what it sounds like. And then today, I saw some of the set photos, and it's just a bunch of people at school, and it's a bunch of those same names we have. So, they're really setting this in high school.
Which, I mean, look, we got, what, half a movie in high school in Amazing Spider-Man 1, and we got, what, 15 to 20 minutes of Parker in high school in the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Yeah. So, like, we really haven't gotten a lot of actual Spider-Man in high school.
Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man would be the one we got the most of.
That was 30 to 35 minutes, and then he graduated in part 2.
Yep, in the very beginning of part 2. And this, they want to make probably at least 3 movies of him in high school, which, if that's the case, maybe if he's shooting these things like 1 a year, the next 3 years.
Tom Holland will have no life ever again.
Yep. Like,
for the next 5 years, all he's going to be doing is Marvel.
Yep, it's like, your summer belongs to us. Whatever little artsy movie you want to do, go do it around that. But your summer belongs to us. Don't do anything stupid. You can't get hurt. Nothing.
Yeah, don't do what the Maze Runner kid did.
Well, he didn't. The Maze Runner did it to that kid. He got hurt during the movie. That's just terrible. You hurt your own star.
Severely enough to halt production.
Halt production. He had to, like, drop out of another movie. He's still, like, laid up. Terrible. Terrible. But Tom Holland, don't do that. I'm looking forward to this. Just now thinking about all the people in it, I'm like, wait. I'm assuming we're going to get a J. Jonah Jameson, but we haven't got a J. Jonah Jameson yet. So are we going to get one? And if so, who's it going to be? And what are they going to tell us? And are they going to follow J.K. Simmons, who, as most people will say, I will take him back as J. Jonah in a heartbeat, and I am one of them. I'm like, I don't like this messing up continuity stuff, but him. Bring him back. So are they going to follow that same beat, or are they going to get somebody that's like a true hard ass? But that doesn't fit into what they're trying to do with this.
Too bad Sam Jackson's already Nick Fury.
No, I don't want to Sam Jackson, Nick Fury. J. Jonah Jameson. I don't know who I would want to see as J. Jonah. I kind of
if they could get Doc Ock. He isn't doing anything these days.
Alfred Molina?
Yeah.
No. Just because everybody kind of universally loves Spider-Man 2 for Doc Ock. So he kind of has to, like, stay away.
The train sequence is awesome.
It is. I have issues with that movie, but that is not one of them. I don't know who I want to see as J. Jonah, but they better have one in here, because it's Marvel proper doing Spider-Man. They kind of need to have the whole Parker, J. Jonah yelling at him kind of thing. I'm interested to see what other stuff leaks out of this movie coming up. It's only been a week and we've gotten so much stuff. A lot of these set pictures.
And Comic-Con to come.
Yeah, they've got to have something for Comic-Con, especially the way they just can't seem to shut up about everything they're doing with this movie. And I kind of want to see him in the suit, because I know in Civil War, the suit is, he's basically wearing those gray pajamas, and the suit is all CGI. Even the time we see his face, it's still not an actual, like, practical suit. So I kind of want to see the practical suit they're going to make for this one. So hopefully we see that at Comic-Con. A couple quick hitters. Did you know that Bryan Cranston did voices for the original Power Rangers show?
No, I thought maybe he had been the robot dude.
I don't think he, no, he, I don't know whose voices he did, but in the original show, I'm guessing some of the monsters, Bryan Cranston was the voice of some of those monsters. So he decided he wants to take his career all full circle and come back around to Power Rangers and be the floating head himself, Zordon.
Or the dying, crinkled up old man lying around a bunch of crystals.
I forgot about that.
Do not ever forget about that. Do not ever forget about the 95. Again, this is my point with the whole thing is I got my Power Rangers movie, I got my Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, and I got it at the exact right time. 1995.
I like the movie. I just forgot about Zordon.
Like, that movie is pitch perfect with the original cast at the right time, and the show fed into it.
They did.
So, like, I mean, that was the perfect way to do that movie. And to do it 20 years later with redesigned costumes that looked like they were something out of Tony Stark's, like, nightmares, and to get freaking Elizabeth Banks to be uber-sexy Rita Repulsa, to get Bryan Cranston to be Zordon. Sure, the guy who plays Tommy is going to be in it because he has to be in everything that's Power Rangers because it's pretty much the only thing he does with his life. I mean, I got my Power Rangers movie. Like, it's not like this was one of those things, like, BR Troopers where, like, I was left hanging forever. You know?
I forget you're younger than me. You like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, I it's not like I didn't get this. I got it. I got it with Ivan Ooze and his cousin Apocalypse. Like, I got Ivan Ooze. I got Zed. I got all of the key pieces and parts. Goldar. I got all of that. I got Putty People. Are they going to give me Putty People? Are they going to give me an updated 21st century version of Putty People?
Yes. I've seen set photos with guys in pajamas. Those are going to be the putties. I don't know what they're going to look like, but they're going to be putties.
I get Lionsgate attained this property, and I get they want to make money off of it. But here's what scares me. Do you know what the release date on that movie is?
Like February?
The beginning of January. It's like mid-January. Like, let me scream and holler and raise my hands and throw my hands around about how many red flags this should throw for everybody. This is a dumping ground. And you are throwing this movie in the dumping ground of dumping grounds. How much confidence can you have in this?
Well, I don't...
If you're uber confident, move it to an August where it can do what Suicide Squad's about to do or what Guardians did 2 Augusts ago. And run for a little while.
Does anything come out next August?
I don't know. I don't think they've staked things out that far yet. Yeah. But
so, here's the thing. So, much like Turtles Learn This Time, it's like, don't put yourself... Like, you're fringe because people didn't really care for the first one. So, let's not put your stuff in the middle of the fringe.
Where it can die a slow and painful death.
August is not a bad date. But, as we've seen, granted, this is a kids movie with Kung Fu Panda, things can make money in January.
But things can also go the route of Legend of Hercules or Winter's Tale or Black Cat or Jupiter Ascending. But, and that's just like the last 3 years of January's.
But all those movies were like, they were shot and done and then we're like, okay, we're putting that here. They're actively planning to put it in January, so that changes it for me a little bit, is that it's not like Jupiter Ascending was supposed to come out like summer, end of summer. They were like, no, February. We are banishing you here.
Seventh Son.
Yeah. This one is like, you know, there are terrible movies that come out in January. If we stick it here and it's at least decent, it's going to make money. And then maybe we can graduate it to August for the sequel. If they had already shot it and they didn't have a date and then they shot it and they said it's done and we're like, now we're putting it in January. I'm like, Oh no. If y'all like your childhood, stay away from this movie. But they're actively planning it that way, so I give them a little slack for that. And you can't tell me you're not at least a little bit intrigued by the fact that Bryan Cranston...
I am intrigued by and whether or not he's going to be put in makeup and they're going to break the tube and he's going to be shriveled up. What about the robot? The robot hasn't been cast.
Who needs
the robot hasn't been cast. Goldar hasn't even been cast. You can't do Rita Repulsa and not do Goldar.
Yeah, I agree. Goldar has to be there. Now, They could also
Dwayne Johnson's pretty busy, so.
Well, I don't think they're going to put somebody in like makeup. I think it's going to be a CGI character, and in which case, you just hire some big ass dude to wear the pajamas, and then you get somebody with a recognizable voice. Hell, The Rock. Hell no, he's not doing it. But I'm just saying the name.
He's too busy.
Yeah, there's something else on there for him. And just, you don't need a big name for that, nor for the robot. You just need somebody of shorter stature, and then you pick somebody with a voice that you want to put in there, and there's your robot. So I don't think we're getting any more big casting news.
So here's my question. Who's going to unlock the dumpster? Because that's the whole thing in the premiere episode.
The stupid astronauts.
Her space dumpster gets opened up by astronauts, and then she, like, comes out and puts her base on the moon.
Yeah. I don't know, because...
Are they going to explain that she was in a space dumpster, or is she just going to naturally have occurred for 5,000 years and just...
I think she will... they will unlock her from something. Judging by the fact that it looks like she gets more physical, maybe they don't find her on the moon, they find her on Earth. I don't know. But...
These are questions you hadn't pondered before.
I know. I know the story of Power Rangers never occurred to me at all. But yeah, you bring up a good point. To that I will say, whatever you think it is, just prepare not to be the case and just live with that. Alright, and as for the aforementioned Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he seems to not want to ever see his new child and fiancé. He's being eyed for the role of the Wolfman in Universal's ever-ongoing intercollected Monsters universe, which already includes Tom Cruise.
Johnny Depp is the Invisible Man.
Tentatively, Johnny Depp is Invisible Man. He's got some things going on that might not happen.
Lies.
So they're trying to fill up their stable with more talent and get The Rock.
You know what the most interesting thing to me about this whole Monsters shared universe is?
What's that?
It's Kurtzman. This is his baby. This is him orchestrating all of this.
What'd he do? Was he the Transformers guy?
He's the Star Trek guy.
Oh, yeah.
Wurtz and Kurtzman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the Spider-Man people. Like, that's them. Amazing Spider-Man is the result of this dude's work.
I didn't hate Amazing Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man, like, the whole 1 and 2, like, their whole deal. Oh. That was them.
Well,
one of these dudes got fired off of what became Star Trek Beyond.
That's right, because he was going to direct it.
Right.
Yeah, and they got rid of,
they're building sets and they fired it. That's the amazing part to me, is that this has been talked about since 2012. That was the first time this idea popped up. They were the originators of the shared universe. They were doing this back in the 40s and 50s with the monsters. And they wanted to reimagine all of their monsters and do them in traditional ways. Their first effort, unfortunately, was Dracula Untold with Lick Evans, which didn't really work out that well.
Nope, it died on stake.
And so now we're going to try and redo Van Helsing. We're going to try and do Invisible Man. We're going to try and do Wolfman. But we're going to start... with Wolfman, which has already had the Del Toro movie with Anthony Hopkins. That's not going to count. So they're going to recast him. But the first one in these movies out the gate is Tom Cruise's Dracula. Not Dracula. Is it Dracula?
No, it's Mummy.
Mummy. That's the first one. And this will not be the Brendan Fraser action-adventure movie Mummy. This will be an actual horror light movie.
I don't, because of the people they have attached, I'm kind of intrigued, but, I mean, I don't really, I just want to see how they turn out.
One has to hit. One hits, then you build on the momentum.
The first one kind of needs to hit, because they've already struck out with Dracula Untold,
But you can go the Incredible Hulk route and retcon that and just have Luke Evans show up and hey, remember me, I'm Dracula, you know?
Yeah, but you can't.
That way you can make the events of the movie canon, but you don't necessarily have to be beholden to everything. Because, Ruffalo's Hulk exists in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, yet Betty Ross is still floating around somewhere and hasn't been seen since the events of Harlem. True. So, like, you don't necessarily... Until Thunderbolt Ross showed up, like, it was the movie that never got mentioned or referenced. So, like, you can do that where you can take Luke Evans and give him better writing and more to do and have him in that universe, but just not reference the events of the Dracula Untold movie.
Yeah. But I agree, you can do that. I just... If The Mummy doesn't hit, can you do it to two of those?
No. But it's Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise is playing with a lot of house money right now with Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, with the Jack Reacher movie and the Jack Reacher sequel, which by the way, I was disappointed to find out Colby Smulders was down here in Louisiana for a period of time, and I did not go and find Robin.
Yeah, she would have been here in Baton Rouge at some point.
Yeah,
I didn't know that either. No. Yeah.
So, but he's gonna have so much goodwill built up and adopted that I think it'll be good. I think it'll be interesting. I think one of them is direct. I think Kurtzman's directing The Mummy, actually.
Probably, yeah.
So we'll see how that gets off to, what kind of a start that gets off to. But as far as Rock as Wolfman, look, Del Toro did it, 10 years ago. Yeah. Rock can do it better, but when is The Rock going to have a life outside of making movies?
I think he's just trying to get them all in now, and then drop dead later.
If he's not already undead.
He's got to. I get him. I don't understand how a man can... He can't possibly sleep more than 3 hours a night. I don't understand how he does that. I just can't get it. But yeah, so... Two more items. One is... we'll do the sad one first. It's the... over the weekend, Anton Yelchin from Star Trek fame as...
Which, you know, they're all going to get asked about this at Comic-Con.
Yeah, well, I would imagine that somewhere in the movie credits, probably at the beginning or maybe right at the end, they'll have a memorial for him. But he passed away this weekend in a freak car accident, something with like his Jeep flipping and killing him.
He got out of his car, he went to check his mail, I guess, or something, and the car, which had a recall notice on it for roll away risk, rolled down the hill and pinned him.
This is terrible, man. It's 27 years old. He had just started
to build a filmography.
Yeah, I've heard he was in something like, is he in the Green Room or something like that?
Yeah, Green Room.
Yeah, so he was just starting to build his career, and he's already gone too soon. A freak accident. So just wanted to touch on that. It's not the kind of story we do normally, but since he's in Star Trek and people know who he is, I think we should at least acknowledge him for that. And on a complete 180, we started this off with your feelings on Independence Day, and now, much like Batman vs. Superman was my albatross to bear for so long, now I finally get to give you one. And it's in the form of Ghostbusters. And they didn't necessarily do anything, like drop any like scenes with the movie or anything like that. But
Why not just throw a DeLorean in there, just mess with everybody's
head? But we got we finally got to hear what their Ghostbusters song is. They're not sticking with the Ray Parker Jr. song. They're going a different route that harkens back to it. But I let you hear this song, and
We Ain't Afraid.
Something like that. It's Fall Out Boy featuring Missy Elliott. Before Brian starts, I will just say, when I saw the song and I posted it, I'm like, I don't know, I don't care how you feel about this new Ghostbusters movie, if you love it or if you hate it, we can all unite and hate this song because it's trash. And with that, take away your albatross.
Song's crappy. It isn't very memorable and doesn't make me want to go buy the soundtrack. Not that I was going to be spending a whole lot of money on the ancillary materials for this movie anyway, but yeah, I'm not. There are way better ways you could have incorporated the Who You Gonna Call thing into it, and The only thing that surprises me is that they haven't attached this to a trailer, because we've gotten two trailers and both have the piano music.
Yes, which is why I thought for the longest we were going to actually like stick to that song. And then, like, a couple weeks ago, they're like, they're going
to
get a new
song. Well, I mean, there's a soundtrack, so there has to be a new song. But I think you could have picked better artists than Fall Out Boy. I think you could have been more referential in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, it just... I don't know, again, just another odd decision. And, like, as much as people want a book about what happened to Fantastic Four and Josh Trank, I am increasingly wanting a book on how this Ghostbusters movie came to be. Because I am increasingly believing that there is a power struggle situation going on, and that not everybody is talking to everybody, and decisions are being made that aren't being made by the person who should be making them.
You know, the only way you get a book like that with everything is that this movie like goes down in a flaming ball of fire. And then everybody eventually comes out and they start pointing fingers at everybody else.
Well, we've already had that to some extent with Melissa McCartney saying that first trailer was not the trailer I was shown.
She did say that.
So, I mean, they're already at that place. So, I mean, we're going to have an entire episode dedicated to that show once it's out and the world can see it and I can sit in the theater and watch it and process what I'm seeing with my eyeballs. But right now, in this moment, this song is the least of my problems with this whole concept. So I will let them slide and just not buy the soundtrack.
Fair enough. Again, I'm from the point of, I'm just going to wait and see. It makes my little girl happy, so I'm okay.
I'm happy that young girls have people to look up to science-wise, and you know these women are not being billed as, you know, the super skinny supermodel Ghostbusters. They're being billed as the normal geeky science women Ghostbusters, and I think that's a huge step forward for femininity and for the diversity of women and the way women are portrayed on film and all that. Again, I'd like to remind the internet that I'm not a sexist. I just don't think this is a good idea at its base on any level. Just like I think that the Independence Day sequel could have been a massive hit in 2000. Yeah. Now, the problem is the technology to do what he wanted to do didn't exist in 2000. But it's a movie, like, there is a shelf life for sequels and reboots and remakes. And this, you know, you can remake The Mummy as many times as you want. The problem you're going to have is now you have a culture of people who remember the three Brendan Fraser movies, and that's what they think of when they think of The Mummy. They don't think of the horror movie from the 1940s and 50s that Universal did. So you have that problem to overcome, but Ghostbusters is something that has been so ingrained in the society for the last 30 years. It never went away. It never went away the way Power Rangers did. It never went away the way the Smurfs did. It never went away the way that Alvin and the Chipmunks did. You know, those were all pop culture. The way the Turtles did. You know, they were pop culture phenomenons that captured the imagination of people at a certain time and place. Those things went away. Ghostbusters, by virtue of the fact that Aykroyd never stopped shutting up about a sequel, and the fact that you kept re-releasing it into theaters, like, at least once every 2 years, the movie was always still floating out there in the subconscious, and they always ran on cable. All the time. So, it never went away. And it was such an ingrained part of it that fan base is large and it is tied to that material. And so when you come back and you say whether we want to remake or reboot, whatever, you have to win those fans over.
Yeah.
And you didn't get off to a very good start and just kept going downhill ever since.
Indeed. For your word. But I don't know. How many more weeks until this?
July 15th.
July 15th. So, what, 3 weeks?
3 or 4 weeks, yeah.
3 or 4 weeks until we finally get to see this movie. And hopefully enjoy it. If not, try to slowly move past it.
Echo, I mean, what at this point, I made the joke earlier about they should just throw a DeLorean in there for good measure to just, like, mess with people. Because, like, there is literally no part of the original that they have not forsaken. The original cast are there. Echo One is there. It's a hearse. You know, yeah. Echo One is there. You know, the gender swap, the secretary. You have all the original cast. You have some of the action being taking place on the rooftop of an apartment building in New York City. You utilize a hotel at one point for one of the contacts. You utilize a library at one point for one of the contacts of Ghost. Slimer is involved. Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is involved. There's no part of... The only thing that will be missing, and God help me if he doesn't, is if the painting of Ivan the Terrible from Ghostbusters 2 is in a museum somewhere and is in frame as they pass by. This is the only part of the Ghostbusters trilogy, the Ghostbusters films, they haven't aped yet. In that, or whatever the song was, the toaster dance to.
Jackie Wilson.
Yeah. Those two things, like, if those two things are in the movie, that's the only other two things they haven't rolled out yet. They were, like, parts of the Ghostbusters lore. You know? And we also found out we're getting a new animated series, so...
Yeah, I saw that. That's kind of whatever. I'm more a fan of the animated series, which is why I don't care that this movie being made, because the movies didn't stick with me quite like that. You know, here's hoping the animated series is good.
I knew that was coming because it was part of their whole deal.
I just thought...
We learned that from the emails. Like, they... And that's the other part to this I keep bringing up. I know, folks. I know I say the same things over and over and over again about this movie. But their plans were revealed in the Sony leak emails. Like, they were planning an entire Ghostbusters cinematic universe... with a new animated series and new movies and all of this stuff. Like, they were planning on riding this train to more money. And that's what puts all this emphasis on this first one, is because if this doesn't work, you can't do any of the other.
Yeah.
The animated series, it's its own thing. You put it on Cartoon Network or Disney Channel or whatever and make its money. The franchise, the movies, all of that merchandise... hinges on this working. And if it doesn't work, you're back to having an IP that you can't touch for a while.
Yeah. Well.
And Sony's already in a place where they have limited IPs that people care about.
What, like three? This one, Spider-Man, and...
MIB.
What?
MIB and 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, that's about it. Because they're losing Bond, so yeah. For their sake, I hope it works out. They have quite the uphill battle to go up.
And I honestly think they could have done a lot better job if they had shown up to a con.
Yeah, they could have. It'll be too late now.
Yeah, the only thing that they did was the trailer rollout. First trailer. Yeah, was it.
Well, you live and you learn. Hopefully the movie lives and they learn from it. But,
All right, Chad, close this out.
That's enough about everything. It's been a good time, as always. So if you want to continue following the podcast, I am at The Mets Theory on Twitter, and...
I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
Thank you, and good night.